Only a Game is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
Some number of people spend portions of their childhoods in refugee camps. A much smaller number of people win the World Series of Poker. Jerry Yang is the only person I've ever known of who has done both. All In, the book he wrote with Mark Tabb, traces Yang's unlikely journey from the village his family fled in Laos in 1975 to Las Vegas, where he outlasted the pros at the final table in 2007. When I had the opportunity to speak with Jerry Yang, I began our conversation by asking him to talk a little about the circumstances under which his family left Laos when Jerry was 7 years old.
I was seven at the time, yes. The village that I lived in, we lived very close to the border of Vietnam, and I grew up in the war zone, and it wasn't very fun, especially at night when you try to sleep. And aside from that, I was always hungry, and my father fought along with the American soldiers during the Vietnam War. He was assigned to the Ho Chi Minh, the infamous Trail Ho Chi Minh, and not only my father, but many other villagers in my village, and thousands of Hmong people. And I just want to correct you earlier. My nationality is actually Hmong, but we live in Laos. Mm-hmm. So they invaded my country in the May of 1975. And my family had no choice but to escape to our neighboring country, Thailand.
Your father's service was also, I gather, the reason that your family did eventually, after 4 years in the refugee camp in Thailand, make it to the United States.
That's correct, yes. We were given options to go to France, Canada, and to some other South American countries, but my father refused. You know, he said, you know, I fought along with those American soldiers. I personally rescued one of the American pilots myself, my platoon did, and I put my life on the line. I want to go to America because I truly believe that only in America that I would be able to experience freedom and peace.
Now, interestingly enough, you write that for the first 30-plus years of your life, you never played a hand of cards. Why not?
I grew up, my father, to be honest with you, my father is a true disciplinarian. And I remember growing up, I was the most mischievous child in my family. And my father never allowed us to play chess or checkers because he thought that those games would lead us into gambling. And so we never had that opportunity at all.
What changed your mind about cards, or more specifically about poker?
I used to be a clinical psychologist, and having interviewed a lot of my clients throughout my career, I realized that I could tell when a client is lying to me or they're telling me the truth. And just based on their body gestures and the way they, you know, the way they sit on their chair, the way they cross their legs, the way they, you know, posture their arms and hands, and you know, whether or not they purse their lips and when they speak to me. So I use some of those at the poker table. And when I first discovered poker in 2005, it was November, and I remember sitting next to my wife on the sofa, and I saw poker for the very first time, and I knew that poker is not just a game of cards, but it really is a game of mental minds. And so if you have that edge, if you have that ability to read your opponents and pick up tells on them, you have a good edge and you have a good chance of winning. So at that point, I knew that I could do it.
So this was when you were sitting on the sofa with your wife. You were watching poker on TV.
That's correct. Uh-huh.
This may be the greatest advertisement possible for televised poker, that they drew in a guy who eventually went on to be one of the most successful players in the world.
Yeah, and my wife had, if she had grabbed the remote control that night, I mean, we would be watching HGTV, you know. I mean, not to say anything bad about HGTV, I love that show, but that night would just happen to be my night. I just happened to grab the remote control first, and I switched it to channel 144 ESPN, and there it was, you know, the final table of the World Series of Poker.
Your wife was not enthusiastic about your new hobby when you told her that you thought this would be something you should get into. How did you convince her that you wouldn't be risking the family's security when you started playing poker?
Oh, goodness, Bill. That's the best part. I remember when I saw poker on TV, I pointed to the TV and I turned to her and I said, honey, I can do that. And when I win, I will use the money for good. And I remember she turned to me and she gave me this very, very disgusting look. And yeah, and Bill, you know, when you have six kids like me and a mortgage and a car payment, I don't blame her a bit. But I made a promise to her that I would take only 5% of my paycheck to play, and that's what I did. And I, to her surprise and to my surprise, I started winning, and now she's my biggest fan.
How soon after you began playing in tournaments with $25 entry fees did you know that you could compete one day with the heavyweights?
Oh, that was my ultimate dream, Bill. I wanted to go to the World Series of Poker, especially playing in the main event. So in May of 2007, I invested $225, and I competed against 187 other players at an Indian casino where I lived. And I beat every single of them that day. And I remember they brought out the $10,000, and they said, "Jerry, you have a couple of choices. You either take the $10,000, forget about World Series, and go home and enjoy your $10,000, or let us use the $10,000 to buy the seat in Vegas, and when July comes, you will go there and play in the main event." And Bill, that was a very, very tough decision. I walked around in the casino for like a couple of hours. I didn't want to call my wife because I knew if I called her, she would say, "Take the money and come home." And so I didn't call her. I told them to go ahead and register me in for the seat, and they did that. And in July, I went to Vegas, and I played, and I 9 days later, I won the whole thing.
When people imagine the lifestyle of the high rollers in Las Vegas, obviously they dream of luxurious hotel suites and buckets of chilled champagne and so on. But tell us about where you stayed when you were competing in that glamorous World Series of Poker.
Oh, yeah, that was a very sad part of my life. I couldn't afford the hotel because I knew I would be in Vegas for like 9, 10 days, maybe 11 days. I went to a casino. I went to the same casino where I won the seat, and I asked for hotel accommodation. They turned me down. So I went to another local casino, and they said, "Okay, well, we'll book you up, and as long as you agree to wear our hat and our shirt, and then we'll go ahead and take care of the hotel." And I was very thankful, And because I was so thankful, I said, "You know, just find me anything. As long as I have a room, a bed, that's fine with me. A place to shower, then that's okay." Well, they found a place that was not very, very nice, not very good. I mean, I walked in there, and I was pretty scared, actually. And when I walked in the room, the smell was pretty bad. I saw cockroaches, you know, running. But I had to do what I had to do. And after I won the World Series of Poker, I thought about the movie Rocky IV, you know, where he was training this barn in Russia, where his opponent was training at this, I mean, high-tech, sophisticated gym. And at the end, Rocky won the fight. And so I kind of compare myself to that movie.
You are known, for among other things, for praying at the poker table, and you write that one of your prayers is, and I'm quoting now, "Lord, let me survive this hand." Have you ever prayed for a specific card to show up?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Sometimes because of the adrenaline rush, or because you're there and you want to win so bad, so sometimes I would pray to God to give me the strength and the wisdom to play my best, you know, and that's what I hope for. And I don't think it's fair for me to pray to God to give me a specific card, because I believe that God loves me just the same like He loves my opponent, and it wouldn't be fair for me to do that. But I truly believe that by praying, that gives me the strength and the wisdom and the courage to really play to the best of my ability.
Jerry, you characterize yourself as superstitious. During the first round of the 2007 World Series of Poker, you drew pocket aces 7 times and concluded, "I think God was trying to tell me something." Would that have been something like, "Hey, bet the aces hard every time"?
It's very ironic, and I can't explain it, but I really, the first level of the 2007 main event championship, I did draw 7 times pocket aces, and I was very shocked. And 6 of those, I won huge pots. Only 1 pair when I had the pocket aces. Nobody called me when I made the race. So I truly think that God was telling me something, and I think that year just happened to me my year, I think. to make it even more ironic, I was given four choices to begin the play. I could have started July 4th, 5th, 6th, or 7th. And I chose July 7th because it has the three sevens, you know. And then when I won, it was July 17th, 2007. So you also had that three sevens again. So it's just all three sevens. And I can't explain that, Bill, but that's what happened.
I'm sure that confidence plays an enormous part in succeeding at poker. But in 2007, you were up against seasoned professional players, and you were an amateur, if not quite an unknown. Were you surprised when you won the tournament?
I was not that surprised. I knew that I would be playing against some of the world-class players in the world. I mean, talking about Dwight Brunson, you know, Johnny Chan, Chris Ferguson, these guys have been playing for like 30, 40, 50 years, you know, and there I was playing for like 2 years. And so, but when we went down to like the last 36 players, I started using my notes. I started taking notes. I will go to the bathroom and take notes on the remaining players and how they play and their strategies and their style. And I used that against them, and it worked out for me.
Before you won millions of dollars at poker, you worked with at-risk children in Southern California as a psychologist. I'm wondering if you still do that sort of work, or has winning the World Series of Poker changed everything?
I don't do that anymore, Bill. The day that I won, my boss was very kind, and he called me and he said, "Jerry, don't even bother coming back." He was very kind, yeah. And he said, "Just go. Even if you come back, we know that you're not going to stay very long." And I said, "Well, I still want to give my 2 weeks notice like everybody else." And he said, "No, don't worry about it. Just go." And so he was very gracious to do that. And after I won, I saw a window of opportunity. I made a promise in front of ESPN cameras and also before God that I would donate 10% to three different charitable organizations, the Ronald McDonald House, which I am a big fan, and also the Make-A-Wish Foundation and Feed the Children, for one very specific reason. I used to be there. I used to be poor. I used to be hungry. I used to be sick. I used to be hopeless, just like those children, and I wanted to do that. So after the win, I donated the 10%, and I wanted to do more. And I, you know, so as I travel, I hosted charity events benefiting the Make-A-Wish and or the Ronald McDonald House, and I have personally raised over $800,000 since my win, and I will continue to do more. So I will continue to play, you know, to the best of my ability, and as long as my schedule permits me to do so. I love the game of poker, and I will continue to do it.
Jerry Yang with Mark Tabb wrote All In, From Refugee Camp to Poker Champ, published by Medallion, and he joined me from KFCF in Fresno, California. Jerry, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Thank you, Bill. You have a wonderful day.
My conversation with Jerry Yang will be featured in this week's program. I'll also be talking with Pete Thamel of the New York Times. He's been writing about how college coaches have been recruiting prospects via social media, or at least hiring younger, more hip assistant coaches to do that for them while they try to figure out how to send an email. We'll have a story about a women's pro soccer team that has no email address. It also has no front office, no website, no telephone, and no patience for anybody who thinks that's a little weird. And we'll visit the University of North Carolina at Charlotte, where football will soon shoulder its way into the campus spotlight as basketball no doubt looks on scornfully. So join us, and remember, you can always hear the program at onlyagame.org.